Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. Just got off the phone with my good buddy, Peter Schiff, and he wanted to make some comments on my last whiteboard video on the housing market. And he said he did a couple comments as himself on the video, but I don't have the opportunity to read most of them. So I wanted to go over what he said because he made some great points. And I wanted to also kind of give a teaser. He called me for two reasons. One, to give me some feedback on the recent video that I made. And then number two, to set up another discussion between him and Brent Johnson about what is happening to the dollar right now and what will most likely happen throughout the rest of 2022. So Brent's more than happy to talk to Peter. We're all pretty good friends. So Peter just asked if I'd set that up so we could do it on my channel. So we'll get that done probably in the next two or three weeks. So stay tuned for that. But let's get back to the comments Peter was making on my whiteboard video, the one that on the real estate market. Specifically, he was talking about the step I did where I think this was step number two. Yes, I think it was number two, where I was talking about a catalyst that would prompt these large funds that have bought just an epic amount of single family homes to use as rental properties. What would prompt them to sell? And I'm referring to groups like Blackstone and some of the entities that Blackstone has bought and sold shares of, like, what was it? Something with an I. Identity. It's not Identity Homes. I got woke identity politics on the mind. It's something like that. You guys, it's something Homes. And they owned 80,000 properties. And I think they sold those shares, Blackstone did. And then they just bought shares of a company that owns, I think, 17,000 single family properties. But, you know, we always talk about the supply side of the equation with real estate right now. And it is true, on the high end, you can create a lot of additional supply. That won't be a problem because they can still produce those homes at a profit. But at the low end with these starter homes, the three bed, two bath, 1500 square foot house, you can't build those today at a profit pretty much anywhere in the United States. So how do we get more supply to create a more balance or to create greater balance between the demand and supply equation? Well, if these hedge funds or private equity funds sold their homes and they had to do that quickly, that would bring down nominal prices. That would increase supply to a point where, assuming aggregate demand was the same, or I think it's probably going lower, that would lead to lower prices pretty quick. Not that we'd have a crash because that takes a long time, but I'm talking about housing prices in aggregate total across the United States coming down by 5%, 10%, something like that per year. Now, once you compound that, that becomes a big number over 3 or 4 years, especially when you add on the fact that we'd probably be getting significant consumer price inflation. So if we have nominal prices go down, they'll be going down even faster in real terms. But the point, the first point that I made on the video, or the first catalyst that I saw, and I discussed this with Alfonso, you know, Macro Alf is the gentleman that ran a $20 billion fund, and he just retired, you know, maybe 6 months ago. But we said that if the 10-year gets up to call it 5-6%, and let's just say they're making a 5% cash or return on their rental portfolio, this could incentivize them to sell because now they've got an asset that's far better risk reward. Especially if that asset's going down in price, because the argument there is going to be, well, the homes are still better because it's going to be somewhat of an inflation hedge. And if they were to transition into the 10-year treasury, even at a 5 or 6% yield, there's a huge negative real rate. They're still losing purchasing power. But if you've got nominal prices going down, especially the market and their investors expect housing prices to continue to go down, if we went into that trend, now all of a sudden you're holding an asset that's throwing off 5%, but you're getting a capital loss, right? The homes are depreciating in value. They're going down in nominal terms. Then that 10-year at 6%, even if it had a negative yield, would be a lot more attractive from a standpoint of risk reward. So that transition could happen pretty quickly if we get into that environment where the 10-year goes up in yield, goes down in price. But another thing that I discussed just briefly is if investors start demanding that the BlackRocks of the world sell their position in real estate. Now what could do this? Well, if the real estate market's going down, that could sure do it. But one of the things that I briefly addressed, and Peter thought that I should go over this, or I should have gone over this more extensively, is if rates are going up, BlackRock and these big investment firms, they're not taking out mortgages to buy these single family homes. They're taking on corporate debt. And this corporate debt, whether they're selling bonds or just, who knows, getting a loan in another way. The bottom line is this debt that they're taking on, it's not a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, meaning that the rates fluctuate. And now who knows, maybe they got a 2-year term, something like that, but these rates adjust. So if their positive cash flow equals a 5% yield right now, okay, well, that's when they took on all this debt to buy the homes in the first place. And let's, for a moment here, look at corporate debt or interest rates here on corporate debt. So this is the interest rate that they have to pay. So this would be Moody's seasoned AAA corporate bond yield. There we go. So this is roughly what the Blackstones of the world could borrow for. So back last year, look at this, 2.5%, 2.48, 2.45%. So if you're borrowing at 2.45% to buy 80,000 homes. And I know I'm kind of taking it to an extreme here. I realize they probably didn't buy all 80,000 of those homes. That was a different company. I know I'm kind of going back and forth here, but I'm just doing this for the concept. If they bought $80,000 worth of homes at and borrowed, let's say 50% of the purchase price for 2.45%, and now all of a sudden, let's say that they had to refi or they had to just roll over the debt at 4.26%, what happens to your 5% yield? It vanishes very, very quickly. Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist Show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today. We were discussing the options of rental yields at 5%, the real estate portfolio, or the 10-year treasury at 6. But now all of a sudden, we could be talking about the difference between a 1% yield on your rental portfolio because your cost of debt has gone up so much, compared to maybe a 3%, which is where the 10-year is pretty much trading right now. So again, this could, along with the investors really pushing the fund managers at Blackstone or these other large pools of money who are buying rental properties, it could push the investors to say, hey, you fund manager, you need to get rid of this real estate ASAP because of all of these reasons. The yield is going down, so our debt's going up, maybe nominal prices are going down, and we want you to hit the bid ASAP. So then what do? They take the 80,000 homes, and not all at once, but they liquidate. Well, what does that do? That adds supply. Now, I mentioned this on the video as well, that most people look at that those 80,000 homes and they say, George, that's not enough to really move the needle because there's 150 million homes in the United States. And that's just a drop in the bucket. And that is true. In my video, I just guessed that there was about 50 million. I was using that as a number, but I talked to Hartman and he set me straight. He's like, it's way off. There's like 150 million. I'm like, okay. Well, luckily on the video, I didn't say that was an accurate number. I was just using that for the illustration of the point. But that's the argument most people would make. Well, it's just a drop in the bucket because it's only 80,000 homes. But then you look at how many homes are usually for sale at any given time in the United States. And that's about 500,000. If you look back at 2021. So if you've got 500,000 homes for sale and you're dumping 80,000 homes, that's going to massively impact the price for all 150 million homes because the price is being set way out on the margin, if you want to say that, right? That the price is really dependent for the overall housing stock is dependent upon the supply-demand equation for what the existing for the number of existing sales. I think that's another way of looking at it. So you guys get what I'm referring to. So this was Schiff's point that, or one of his main points, is that I should have emphasized that a lot more, that if rates go up, these big funds have to roll over their debt at a much higher interest rate, yield goes down. This will increase the probability of them selling all of that supply back into the market. And because there's only 500,000 homes for sale, roughly, at any given time, this could take us from a supply shortage to a supply surplus very quickly. Just like I've argued in other videos, that we could go from a labor shortage to a labor surplus very quickly as well if stocks and cryptocurrencies continue to go down. Because I think that's one of the main reasons so many of these people have chosen not to go back to work after the Cervasa sickness. So really interesting points from my buddy Peter Schiff, and I'm really glad he called that and brought that to my attention, because that's something, although I addressed it just for a moment on my video, in future videos, I think I can incorporate that as to another argument for the real estate market facing some headwinds in the very near future. That doesn't mean that I'm predicting that the housing market will go down or will have a crash. As you guys know, I always believe there's all these cross currents happening at the same time, and there's headwinds and there's also tailwinds. And we need to be cognizant of all the factors at play so then we can determine the probabilities of XYZ happening in the future on our own. That's what this channel is all about. Above and beyond freedom, liberty, and free market capitalism. It's about helping you and encouraging you to do the critical thinking and to do the research and think in terms of probabilities, not certainties, but to do that on your own. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. See you in the next video.